time we take my car.
Bet?
Bet.
Ben grinned.
They drove through the rain in silence, the windshield wipers whispering, "Help me, help me." Destiny thought of Romy and their friendship and refused to think what Romy might be enduring at this moment, refused to consider the possibility that she might never see her again. Ben mused how grateful he was to find such a good friend in Julio. Because of his independent attitude about most things, Ben had few close friends, and he realized now how much Julio's honest acceptance of him meant. They approached the place where Romy and Julio had vanished. Destiny stopped her car, and they got out. It was pouring rain, and the ground was muddy and messy.
"Look! Here's what's left of the tire tracks of a big car, I think," Ben noted.
"Probably Terrell's Cadillac."
"Hard to tell with all this rain. So you think they took them in the car?"
"Yeah, but I don't think they took them for a scenic ride."
"This is kidnapping, Destiny," Ben said solemnly as they hurried back to her car.
"I know. We gotta hurry. I have a bad feeling about this."
"Let's follow the road around the park, first of all. Then we'll get out and walk where my senses tell me to."
Even though the road was paved, it was narrow, and the rain made the shadows of the trees loom tall and menacing. They drove, not expecting to find Julio and Romy in front of them, but hoping to find something that might give them a clue. Nothing had appeared, however, just rain and wind.
"This is a big forest," Ben noted. "Why'd they put a forest in the middle of the city anyway?"
"They didn't," Destiny replied with authority. "The forest was here first. This is all that's left of the original woods that were here when people started cutting down trees to build houses and schools and fast food restaurants."
"You're probably right," Ben sighed.
"What time is it?"
"After midnight, I know."
Destiny glanced at the clock on the dashboard.
"Oh, Ben, it's 1:11. Make a wish."
"What?"
"Make a wish. Don't ask why. Just do it."
"Okay, I wish we..."
"No, you can't tell. Wish silently. When a digital clock reads the same three numbers across, you make a wish."
"That's stupid, I think."
"Just shut up and wish. Don't question the universe."
"Okay, I wished.
Well, I had to question the mysteries of the great beyond,"
Ben asked with cheerful exaggeration.
"Did you wish?"
"Of course."
"Do I have to clap my hands three times and hold my breath so Tinkerbell won't die?"
"Don't make fun of this, Ben. It works."
Destiny tried to act offended, but grinned in spite of herself.
"Okay, whatever you say," Ben replied, but she didn't think he was too convinced.
"Destiny?" Ben said as he tried to get his bearings in the rain and darkness.
"Pull over right here."
She stopped the car, and they sat silently for a moment, listening to the thunder and rain, and watching the storm as it rumbled through the woods.
"Should we get out and search now?"
she asked Ben.
"Yeah, but we don't need to be walking so close to all these trees in a thunderstorm. Lightning strikes trees, you know."
"Actually," she teased, "lightning is drawn more to metallic objects, like earrings and safety pins."
"Ouch!"
Ben twitched and writhed as if he had been hit. The thunder roared and exploded around them, and lightning flashed, brightening the sky just enough to show the dark, heavy clouds for a moment. The rain poured in sheets, and the windshield wipers could not keep up.
The car windows began to fog up. Destiny rolled the windows down just a little to let in some air, but the rain forced itself through the tiny cracks.
I guess we'd better wait a few minutes. We can't do them any good if we can't even see where we're going.
We could walk right past them and never know it, Ben said reasonably.
I wonder where they are, Ben, Destiny moaned.
What if they're out in this? What if they're wet and scared and lost? What if they're hurt?
Destiny started to cry.
Tomorrow, when the sun is shining, we'll look back on all of this as a great adventure, and the four of us will laugh.
You'll see, Destiny, Ben said, trying to comfort her. He reached over and touched her hand. She didn't pull it away until she had to find a tissue to blow her nose.
Hey, Ben, Destiny said slowly. Suppose they're not okay.
You mean dead?
Yeah, dead. It's hard to say the word.
I don't know, Destiny. I talk big, but I've never seen death up close.
Me either. I get the chills just thinking about it.
She shivered.
You cold, Destiny?
A little.
Here, take my coat.
Thanks. What about you?
I got a sweatshirt on. I'm okay.
Ben glanced at Destiny in the darkness. She sat huddled in his jacket, her face a mask of fear and worry. He knew as she watched the storm that she was visualizing Romy and Julio and trying to imagine what it was like for them and where they might be on this terrible night. Ben was glad that he was fairly dry, sitting in Destiny's car and experiencing the fury of a storm with the faint smell of her hairspray in the air. She asked him,
Ben, you ever think about what they're saying on the news about Romy and Julio having names like Romeo and Juliet?
Yeah, that's something.
It's heavy the way they fell for each other so quick.
Were there any gangs in the play? Asked Destiny.
Not really, Ben told her. The families hated each other, and everybody in town sided with one family or the other, just like gangs do. But the play ends with death. Lots of death.
Well, this is real life, Ben, Destiny whispered. I don't think I could deal with death like they did in the play.
I hope you don't have to, he said sincerely. They talked quietly as they listened to the rain. Ben dozed a few minutes, and Destiny did as well. They were afraid to run the motor very long, but the inside of the car was warm enough. Destiny woke up, startled, with a particularly loud blast of thunder.
Wow! That was a big one! But it seems like it's letting up a bit,
she noted as the rain steady drumming on the hood of the car began to diminish a bit.
I'm tired, she added, and a little hungry, too.
It seems like we've been waiting in this car for hours.
Ben stretched his arms and legs as far as the cramped confines of the car would allow. He glanced at the clock.
It's 2:20. No wonder we're tired and hungry.
Oh, my goodness, exclaimed Destiny. Get ready to wish.
You gotta be kidding. Again?
Ben looked at Destiny as if she had lost her mind.
I'm serious as a heart attack.
Destiny fixed her eyes on the clock for another minute.
Okay. 2:22. Wish, she commanded.
Okay, okay. I'm wishing.
Me too. Did you wish the same wish as the last time?
Destiny sighed with relief that they had not missed it.
Yep. You want to know what I wished for?
No, don't tell me, or it won't come true,
Destiny warned.
Well, I wouldn't want that to happen, Ben said and smiled. Then he changed the subject.
I think the rain has slowed down enough to get out and walk and search some more. I'll feel better knowing at least we tried to look for them. Let's head down to the lake. It's down that walkway.
Destiny agreed, and they gathered their flashlights and rain gear and headed out into the wet, dark night.
Chapter 49 Romeet and Julio The Ordeal. The old sweatshirt that was pulled over Romy's head hadn't been washed in a while and smelled of sweaty mail. She screamed, but the sound was muffled. She was held tightly by two sets of very strong arms as she was carried away from Julio and toward what she did not know. She could hear Julio kicking and fighting behind her, but the sounds were distant, and when they forced her into the back seat of a car, the two back doors slammed, and she couldn't hear him anymore. Two silent bodies sat next to her, holding her arms and preventing any movement. When she tried to kick at one of them, he kicked her shin as hard as he could. She refused to cry out, but silent tears fell from her eyes behind the dirty sweatshirt. She could hear the trunk of the car being opened, muffled sounds of scuffling and cursing, and then a thud as something was tossed into the trunk. She knew it was Julio. She prayed he was safe. The trunk slammed, the car doors opened, the rest of the four gang members squeezed in, and the car sped off. It had all happened in 2 minutes. No one spoke. They knew where they were headed. Romy strained to hear sounds of movement from the trunk, but she could hear nothing. The car turned left 3 times, then drove over what seemed to be a gravel roadway. She could hear the crunching under the tires and the ping of stone against metal as the pebbles hit the car. They slowed to a stop. The gang members opened the car doors. Romy was pushed from one side and pulled to the other as she was forced from the car. She could just see the gravel under her feet from where the sweatshirt over her head had twisted a bit. She could smell the water nearby. She started to panic. Since they hadn't driven very far, Romy figured they were near London Woods Lake. It was a large lake, popular with fishermen and boaters in the summer. But at this time of year, it was cold, bleak, and virtually deserted. Romy had never been so scared in her life. She trembled as she stood there, afraid to run because of the guns she knew they had, afraid to call out to Julio, but alert, listening, and ready to take advantage of whatever might happen. No magical chances appeared. She heard them open the trunk and grunt as they lifted Julio out. There was no sound from him, and Romy could detect no movement. The two guards still held her tightly. She couldn't even turn her head to listen for a flicker of noise or action from him. She only heard the dull thud of Julio's body being dropped on the gravel about 3 feet from her. She started to tremble uncontrollably. Julio couldn't be dead. There was no gunshot, and he hadn't been in the trunk long enough to lose consciousness. But no sound came from the direction of where she knew he lay. Suddenly her arms were jerked tightly behind her. She cried out in pain as they tied the ropes around her wrists and arms. The hood was pulled tighter over her face, making her breath come in short, shallow gasps as she struggled for air through the fabric. They dragged her then to what she knew was the edge of the water. As she struggled, one of her shoes came off. Her terror grew. Fear for Julio, fear of what they would do to her, and fear of the water made her struggle frantically as they forced her down the path. She screamed, her breath puddling in hot gasps inside the sweatshirt over her face. Still they pushed her toward the water. Romeo felt herself being lifted into something hard and wooden. It smelled wet and moldy, and was damp as her knees landed on it. She knew it was a boat when they made her kneel in the bottom of it, head down, arms tied behind her back. She felt them wrap more rope around her as they tied her, still kneeling to the seat of the boat. She could not move. Her knees hurt, her back began to throb, and her shoulders ached as she lay there, tied in the bottom of the damp wooden boat. She was weeping loudly now, begging for mercy, for a loosening of the ropes, for help. Still no one spoke. All was silent. She heard them lift Julio next with silent grunts. They seemed to be tying him just as they had tied her, on the other side of the center seat. She could hear a muffled groan as Julio began to regain consciousness. Romy cheered and thought that perhaps there was hope after all. She willed him to speak, to gain strength, to throw off these devils who were hurting them. She knew he could do it. Then she heard a thunk as they hit him in the back of his head once more. He dropped, ceased to struggle, and once again, all was silent. All she could hear was her own sobbing tears and the lapping of the waves against the side of the boat. They pushed the boat into the water then. Romy had screamed in terror. To be in this much water, with night approaching, tied helplessly in the bottom of a boat, was more than she could bear. She pulled at the ropes, hysterical now, as she felt the boat begin to bounce upon the waves of the lake. She pulled and strained every muscle, using every ounce of her strength to get free, to get away from the terror. She heard one of the gang members splash into the water with a curse. Then a bright, throbbing pain exploded at the base of her neck, and Romy was silent and still. The car sped away, gravel rattling the bottom of it as it headed back to the main road. Silence settled on the scene. The night crept quietly and deeply over the lake. Darkness filled the small wooden boat in which Romeo and Julio floated helplessly. A faint rumble of thunder threatened in the distance. Chapter 50. The Dream and the Reality. It was the dream. Romy knew she'd have to call her mother for this one. Every muscle in her body ached. Her shoulders were screaming, her knees throbbed, and she couldn't breathe. She felt the terror, but didn't feel the water. She smelled it, but there were no flames. This dream was different, and much worse. Romy groaned, and her eyes opened suddenly. All was darkness. She reached for her bedroom light, but her arms wouldn't budge. She could hear thunder in the distance, could feel a stiff breeze on her back. Had she left the window open? She struggled to wake up, and then the pain in her head returned, and she remembered. She began to weep as she remembered it all, the ropes, the boat, the fear, the cruel blow to the back of her head. And Julio,
Was he alive? She struggled to speak. Julio? Julio? All was silent. Julio did not move. Although she could do nothing with the ropes that held her, Romy found that if she twisted her head from side to side, the sweatshirt over her face moved a bit. Slowly, she shook it off, like a dog shakes off a hated collar. The cool night air rushed into her lungs, and she breathed deeply and thankfully. It was pitch dark. No moon shone in the cloud-covered sky, and the rumblings of thunder were becoming loud and powerful. She couldn't tell how far into the lake they had floated. She couldn't see either shore. The air was as black as the sky and water. It was cold, and a few hard, dark raindrops hit her back. No hope floated with them. Romy wept. The rain began to pelt them, and the wind increased. The boat rocked helplessly in the water, and Romy screamed in terror once again. Julio stirred and groaned, the cold water and wind forcing him into consciousness. He gasped for breath as Romy had, and Romy let hope enter her heart once more.
Romy, please be okay, Julio pleaded. Yes, Julio, I am. My arms hurt where the ropes are too tight. My knees and shoulders are killing me, but I think I'm okay. I'm so scared, Julio. What about you? Are you okay?
I think so, Julio replied groggily.
We gotta get loose. Get these ropes off. Big storm coming, Romy.
Dazed and silent for a moment, he tried to make his mind think clearly.
What are we going to do, Julio?
Romy's voice jarred him back to reality.
I'm sure our parents are looking for us, and the police are too. They are, don't you think?
Romy asked, suddenly doubtful.
Sure they're looking, Julio said, trying to reassure her. But do you think they'll find us? If we're on London Woods Lake, it's big and it's dark, and it's getting ready to storm.
They'll never find us in a storm, Romy said, worried. I wonder what time it is. My head hurts.
They'll find us. Don't worry. Or if not, we'll find a way out of here ourselves, Julio said with a certainty he didn't feel.
Out of a boat in the middle of the lake? I can't swim, Julio. I can't swim. I'm so afraid. All that blue and nothing to hold on to.
The small boat rocked on the increasingly strong waves of the lake. They could hear the sloshing of the water on the sides. Water splashed into the boat, and the rain pelted them from above. Julio said quietly,
Hey, Romy, remember our talk about adventures and fantasies? Well, we've got a real one on our hands here. I'm a good swimmer, remember? And remember this, I won't let anything happen to you. You got that?
Romy didn't know whether to cry or to giggle.
If I wasn't so scared and stiff and didn't hurt so bad, she said to Julio in the darkness, I think I'd like the idea of being curled up in the bottom of a boat with you.
You're a sick puppy, Romyette.
Why did they do this to us, Julio? I'm so scared.
Who knows? Right now, we've got to get loose. Let's see if we can wriggle out of these ropes. Can you move your hand at all?
She tried, but her hands, wet and cold, wouldn't cooperate.
I can't move my fingers, she wailed. My hands are numb. My whole body is soaked and freezing. I'm so cold. I can't do anything. We're going to die here.
We are not going to die here. Now force yourself. Wiggle those fingers and pull at the end of your rope. There you go. That's better.
Romy worked silently as she struggled with her bonds. She could hear Julio's breathing, raspy and thin, as he labored to do the same. Then she said quietly,
I'm scared, Julio.
I am too, Romy, but we are going to get out of this. I swear to you. The ropes on my hands are almost untangled. I think this is the last one.
Julio sat up slowly and painfully, rubbing his arms and wrists, thankful for the rain that fell and cooled the rope burns. Romy managed to loosen the last of her rope as well. Julio helped undo the ropes tying her to the boat.
I'm free, she told him victoriously.
As she tried to sit up, she groaned.
Oh, the pain! Julio, I can hardly move.
Me either. But I think we're gonna have to move quickly. This storm is getting pretty bad.
Lightning, which had flashed in the distant sky, was now right above them. Trees in the distance stood like gaunt sentinels of the lake, brightly illuminated by the fierce flashes. Another streak of fire pierced the sky and pointed itself at one of the trees. It glowed, then flashed, then cracked and burned like firewood. For a moment it was a torch. Then the rain and wind doused the flame, and the smell of burning wood drifted across to Romiette and Julio, who huddled together in the bottom of the little boat. As the wind intensified and churned the water, the small boat was tossed about mercilessly. Rolling explosions of thunder shook the sky, the earth, and the water. The whole world shook with noise and power. Finally, the rain pelted them with fury. Lightning sizzled as it struck the water, and the lake itself seemed to be contorted in anger. Julio and Romiette sat huddled together, terrified, trembling, tossing in the bottom of the boat.
Can you die of noise, Julio?
Romy asked between bursts of thunder and flashes of lightning.
I don't know if noise ever killed anybody, but fear sure did.
Once more, the thunder exploded above their heads.
I've never seen lightning up close like this before, Romy exclaimed, amazed at the spectacle in spite of her fear. It's so wild, like God spitting fire from his fingernails.
And then crashing mountains together,
Julio said in awe. Both of them realized the danger they were in.
We've got to get out of this boat, Romy,
Julio said with certainty. Romy's heart quickened. Fear spoke first.
I'm not getting out of this boat. You must be crazy. If I get out of the boat and in the water, I will die. No doubt about it. I'm just gonna sink to the bottom and die.
Not if I can help it. Let's see now. Where are the oars? They ought to be attached to the side, right?
Julio felt for the place where the oars ought to be.
I can't see much, but I don't think there are any oars here, Julio.
They took them, of course, Julio sighed.
Now what? Romy asked.
Are your hands still stiff from the ropes, Romy?
They're okay. What do you want me to do?
Let's see if we can paddle this thing by hand.
They each moved to a side of the small boat and placed their hands in the cold water. On a summer day, streaming a hand in the water playfully was a pleasant and soothing experience. But their hands soon became numb as they tried to move the boat in the frigid, churning water. The boat made no progress.
"It's raining so hard, and the lightning is so close," Romy yelled through the downpour.
Julio had been in storms in a boat before, but never a storm this intense, and never alone. He knew they were a sure target for a bolt of lightning.
"We gotta get out of this boat and off this water, Romy. That lightning is too sharp and too close. It's gonna hit us."
"I can hardly hear you. The thunder is roaring so much. The whole world is exploding," screamed Romy.
She laughed then, in spite of the situation. Julio, curly hair dripping, drenched and weary, was illuminated for a moment by the lightning. He looked awful. She knew she didn't look much better.
"Look at us, Julio.
And to think I worried this afternoon about how my hair would look for you."
Julio looked at Romy's matted hair and soaked clothes and tossed more water on her. They both laughed so hard, they forgot their plight for one brief moment. Then, a bolt of lightning speared past them and landed with a flaming, steaming sizzle in a tree about 10 feet up the shore. It jarred them back to reality.
"Oh, my Lord! That one was close!" Romy cried, suddenly serious and frightened again.
Julio told her clearly,
"We've got to get out of this boat, Romy."
"No!" she screamed. "I'll drown!"
"I won't let you drown."
Julio lowered himself into the freezing water. He gasped at the coldness of it. He held out his hand to her.
"Take my hand. Hold on to me. I will not let you go."
"No, Julio. I'm terrified of water. I'll pull you down. I can't do it."
She let go of his hand and sat shaking in the boat.
"Romy, the lightning is hitting trees on shore. It will hit this boat. I know it."
In the flashes of lightning, she could make out his face, pleading and full of concern, not for himself, but for her.
"Come on, Romy. You'll be fine."
Trembling, she seized his hand and let him lead her over the side of the boat. He lowered her slowly and carefully into the water. Romy was stiff with fear and cold. She barely dared to breathe. He helped her grab the side of the boat and bent her numb fingers so she could grasp it better. The water sloshed onto her face, and she gasped, but Julio lifted her so her head was above the waterline.
"Please, don't let me go," she said, trembling.
"I've got you. Relax. I won't let anything happen to you. Do you hear me? I love you, Romiette."
"What did you say? The thunder, the noise, the water."
"Te amo. I love you. You're not going to die."
With a crack that split the heavens, a huge bolt of fire was spit from the sky. It arced, twisted, and with vicious rage, the lightning stabbed the small wooden boat. The air smelled of charred wood and the harsh chemical odor of fire between water and sky. Flames, which were quickly extinguished by the driving rain, rose from the gaping hole and tried to spread along the bottom of the boat. Both Romiette and Julio could feel the electricity of the lightning bolt as the small boat was incinerated and crumpled. Her hand was wrenched from his, and he was alone, struggling to find the surface. Julio reached for Romy in the darkness, but all was fire and acrid smoke and swirling water. He searched the area, fruitlessly grabbing broken pieces of wood from the boat, hoping that Romy was somehow clinging to one of them. He shouted her name, went under again and again, but Romy was deep within the thing she feared the most, the dark, cold water. Chapter 51. The Reality is the Dream. Romy tried to think, to scream, to remember. The water seared her thoughts. Thinking became a dream, and remembering a painful reality. Was this reality or a dream? The thunder roared, the lightning flashed, then thunder exploded once again. She smelled the water then, deep, evil, powerful. The water had been their only hope, their only chance, their leap into faith, into death. She had screamed. Then all was silence as the water thundered into her ears, forced itself down her throat, and burned its way into her nose, her lungs, her brain. This water was fierce and deadly. No cool, gentle waves, but hot, choking, liquid flames sucking the breath of life from her. She struggled, searching for air, for land, for something to hold on to. But there was only the water pulling her into its depths. She couldn't breathe. She couldn't swim. She could no longer scream. The fire cooled, the terror ebbed, and the dark shadow of death embraced her. She drifted then, in a haze of colors and swirls and black frightening void. Voices! Could she hear voices? One voice. Maybe it was a song. No, all was silence. Thick, enveloping quiet that led to despair. No reason to care, to breathe, to live. So easy to let the silence swallow her. But the voice pierced the darkness. It was calling her name, grabbing her thoughts, and making her remember the fear, the pain, the cold, clammy water. The water! She gasped, and the water grabbed her once more, viciously dragging her to its depths. But that voice... It floated down to where she lay, cradled in the arms of the victorious water. The voice called her one last time. It was Julio. Chapter 52. Romeet and Julio. Fire and Water. Julio swam to the surface once more and breathed deeply. It was still raining in strong sheets of water, but the fury of the storm seemed to have subsided. He looked around frantically for Romeet, but he could see no sign of her. He knew she was terrified. This was her nightmare, her fear dream, and he was unable to help her. He plunged beneath the water, but, except for the diminishing sound of the thunder as it retreated into the distance, he could hear nothing. He shouted her name, half praying, half pleading to the hidden stars to help him find her. Romeet! Romeet! He dove under the water again, reaching for her, feeling for her, sensing her closeness. He knew he only had a short time to find her. He let himself drift to the bottom of the lake, where the darkness of the water was total and complete. The only thing that led him was his heart, his knowledge that he would never leave that lake without her. His lungs were burning fire, about to explode, when he touched her arm. She was floating face down, her hair caught in a jagged rock. He touched her face, gently freed her, and swam with her to the surface. He gasped frantically and let her face feel the night air. The rain had stopped, the lightning was merely a distant blink, and the air was clear and cold. But Romeet floated in his arms, not breathing, unaware of the life it offered. Julio shouted her name again. Romeet! Silence, except for the echo of his voice on the water. He could see the shore now, and swam as swiftly as he could, calling her name, the only raindrops now his tears of fear and anguish.
He knew that they could both die of hypothermia if they didn't get out of that water right away. It seemed like hours, but only a few minutes had passed since they had lost each other in the storm. He reached the shore, half-lifted, half-dragged her from the water, and laid her gently on the ground. He forgot about the pain in his arms and back and head. He forgot about how cold he was. His only thought was to make her breathe, to make her live. He tried to remember all the steps of CPR as he breathed into her mouth and compressed her chest. He couldn't tell if she was dead or just unconscious. She lay in the mud, unmoving, and Julio shouted curses to the stars. The wind blew hard, much colder now that the rain had stopped, and Julio knew he could do no more. He shivered uncontrollably in the darkness and looked for shelter. He was dizzy, weak, and was starting to fade into unconsciousness himself. He picked up Romiette's cool, damp body and stumbled as far as he could into the woods. He tripped over a huge tree that had fallen many storms before and almost dropped Romy as he landed in a hollow under it. He gently placed Romy on the spongy pine needles and leaves, then squeezed himself into the shallow hole next to her. He pulled Romiette as close to himself as he could. At least there was a bit of shelter from the wind, he thought vaguely. He tried to concentrate, but he was so tired, and the air was so cold. It was easy to rest for a bit. Julio shivered, hugged Romy closer to him, and faded into sleep. Chapter 53. Police Investigation. 5 a.m. Captain Eskaluski frowned and scratched what was left of his thinning hair. He didn't like this one. His men had been out all night, tromping through rain and mud, but able to do very little. All of the gang members, except for the girl, refused to make any statements at all. Their code of silence, he assumed. His thoughts were interrupted by a call from Will Spear, his chief field investigator.
Captain, this is Will. We found something, and it's not good.
Eskaluski braced himself.
What is it? He asked quickly.
We found pieces of a boat broken and floating out here on the far end of the lake. It was charred and burned. A big hole burned right through the center of it. Looks like it had been struck by lightning.
Any sign of the kids?
No, Captain. Just dark, stormy water.
Officer Spear paused.
Sir, I think you better order the lake dragging equipment.
Eskaluski sighed.
Already done, Will. You don't think they tried suicide like in the Shakespeare story, do you?
He was trying to cover all possibilities.
Maybe they were scared of the gang and tired of all the opposition to their relationship, and they decided to off themselves. It's happened before. Any sign they were in that boat, Will?
Nothing yet. But if they were in that boat, we might have a case of murder instead. I sure hope not. They seem to be nice kids.
Nice, yes, but stupid, maybe.
Either way, Officer Spears summarized. We've got a big thunderstorm, an unsearchable lake, two missing kids, and no bodies.
Yet, added Eskaluski, who had seen far too many unhappy endings to stories such as this one. He sighed again.
Thanks, Spear. Stay on it. Report to me anything you find.
Yes, sir.
At that moment, another officer knocked on the captain's door. He was young, had only been on the force a few weeks, and was just 1/4 inch taller than the minimum requirement to be a police officer. Eskaluski chuckled as he watched the new guy walk. It seemed as if he tiptoed everywhere, trying to make himself look taller.
Excuse me, sir. Officer Baltzar here. I found something, sir, that I think might be important in this investigation.
He was almost trembling with excitement.
What have you got, Baltzar? The captain questioned, smiling at his youthful enthusiasm. I went back and searched the trunk of the car once more, sir, he explained. The one that the alleged gang members were arrested in?
Yes, I know the car, the captain said impatiently. What did you find?
I crawled into the trunk, since I'm gifted with small stature, sir, and I found this in the back.
He handed the captain a tiny video recorder, the one that had fallen from Julio's pocket when they tossed him into the trunk. Captain Eskaluski looked at the camera and heartily thanked the young officer.
I think you found the key piece of evidence, Baltzar. Great detective work.
Baltzar beamed. The captain hurried to the lab to see if his men could run the tape. Perhaps this would help them find the missing teenagers. Chapter 54. Ben and Destiny, 5 a.m. Destiny and Ben tromped through the mud and diminishing rain, searching, but having no idea where to look. They looked under branches, in shallow caves, in all the picnic areas, even the trash dumpsters. They could tell when the police had been through an area. It was well-worn and flattened by several pairs of boots. But they never came into direct contact with the small police search team that worked through the storm and the night. Ben made Destiny rest back at the car a couple of times, but they spent most of the night searching for hope, and finding very little. Destiny had called her mother on the car phone a couple of times, so they knew the police had found the keychain at the boathouse, and that the devil dogs had been arrested. A dull gray dawn was beginning to appear. Destiny stretched and said to Ben,
"Let's check near the boathouse one more time, now that we can see a little better."
"What do you think we can find that the police can't?" Ben grumbled.
"You've been watching too many TV shows, Ben," Destiny grinned. "Maybe they missed something."
She beamed the flashlight toward the bushes on the walkway that led from the boathouse to the water.
"See anything?" Ben asked without much faith.
Destiny screamed.
"Ben, come here! Where's the other flashlight?"
Ben ran to her.
"Hey, what's this?"
Ben held up a brown shoe, caked with mud, that was lodged behind a bush.
"It's Romy's shoe," screamed Destiny.
"No, it's my shoe. I loaned it to her."
"Gee, that seems like so long ago. Oh, Ben, they were here. Do you think they're in the water? Maybe they drowned. Romy can't swim, Ben."
"We'll find them," he soothed her.
"Now don't start crying. I can't deal with it." "Wait, the shoe feels cold and damp. I'm getting psychic vibes."
"The shoe is talking to you?"
"Yeah, you know I'm psychic, don't you?"
"That's what you keep telling people."
"What does the shoe say?
You know it could be just the fact that the shoe was in the mud that it feels cold and damp to you."
"No, it's more than that. Let's go down to the water. I sense fire and water."
Destiny walked down to the edge of the water, the place from where boats were launched. "When that storm hit, there were lots of lightning strikes, so you might be right. Let's start walking around the lake and see if we can spot anything," Ben suggested.
"Shine the flashlight on the water. Do you see anything, Destiny?" "No, let's keep walking,"
she sighed.
"Wait, what's that?"
She pointed to a dark shadow on the surface of the lake.
"Just a tree branch in the water. Probably broke off in the storm," Ben said.
"I'm hungry,"
exclaimed Destiny after a few minutes of walking.
"That fruit was gone too long ago,"
I thought you were starting a new diet, Ben teased her.
You remember I said that?
I remember everything you say, Destiny.
Why?
No reason. You tired?
No, but we're not going back until we find them, she said firmly.
Goes without saying, agreed Ben. Let's keep walking. Let's use both flashlights. We've got to spot something.
I feel so helpless, Ben, moaned Destiny.
What happened to your psychic vibes? He asked, trying to cheer her up.
They fizzled. We're probably too late anyway.
Quit talking like that, Destiny. What time is it?
6:10 in the morning. I'm so tired and hungry and scared. We've been here all night long.
So have they, Ben reminded her quietly.
I'm so afraid the morning will bring bad news.
That was some storm last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm glad I had you to share it with. I wasn't even scared.
Destiny smiled at Ben with honest appreciation.
Talk about percussion. Wow! How mighty is the power of nature!
Ben raised both his arms to the sky in exultation.
Now don't you go telling people we spent the night together,
warned Destiny, laughing.
Well, we did.
Yeah, but... Destiny, check it out. We've caught all five.
What do you call it? The Fantastic Five?
Oh my goodness, I almost forgot. We got 111 and 222.
Then we remembered 333 and 444.
And now it's almost 555.
Wish, Destiny, wish.
You mean you believe that stuff now, Ben?
I don't know what I believe. All I know is that you made me wish 4 times in a row, and I'm not going to miss this last one. Especially if it means that our wishes will come true.
Now shut up and wish.
Wishing,
Destiny exclaimed with a big smile.
We did it, Destiny! We wished on 5 in a row.
So what does that mean?
They say that...
Who are they?
Smart people. Probably women, Romy says, explained Destiny. Anyway, they say that if you catch 5 in a row, your wish is guaranteed to come true, and you get an extra wish granted as a special bonus prize.
Can you tell your wish now?
I think so.
Destiny frowned, trying to remember the rules.
What did you wish, Ben?
I wish that Romeo and Julio be found safely, of course.
What about you?
I wish the same thing. Do you think this will work?
She asked hopefully.
What happened to your faith in the universe? He teased.
It got cold and hungry and scared in the darkness of the night.
I still believe in you, Destiny, Ben said, looking directly in her eyes. And in the universe, and magic wishes, too. He looked away quickly and threw a rock in the lake.
You're something else, Ben,
Destiny remarked, pretending not to notice his look.
What was your extra wish for?
You?
Me?
I think you're dynamite, Destiny.
Do I have to dye my hair blue if I hang out with you?
Only if it matches your outfit.
Hey, I like your style.
They grinned at each other as the sky became brighter with the morning sun. In the distance, near the boathouse, they could see movement as the police and other search teams began for the day.
Let's go see if anyone else has had any better luck in finding anything,
Destiny suggested.
Maybe they have some coffee back at the boathouse, Ben added.
Are you still cold, Destiny?
much warmer now, she said quietly.
They marched back along the shore of the lake. Destiny carried Romy's shoe in one hand. Ben held her other hand. Chapter 55. The Parents, 6 a.m. Lady Capel stretched and yawned, then woke up suddenly. The horror of last night engulfed her as soon as she opened her eyes. The parents had spent most of the night at the station, calling friends and organizations who could assist in a full-scale search as soon as the day would allow. They had made and copied posters, which were ready to be distributed to stores and nailed on telephone poles in the community. Keeping busy had helped keep the fear at bay for a while. Romy's mother had only dozed a minute, but she felt guilty for sleeping even 1 second while Romy was lost. She glanced at Mrs. Montague, who slept fitfully on the other bench.
"Maria, it's almost dawn," she called.
"Wake up." "Did they find the children, lady?"
Maria replied, startled.
"No, no new words yet," sighed Romy's mother. "I just wanted to be ready for whatever may come today."
Maria nodded.
"I can't believe I fell asleep on those hard chairs. I didn't think I could sleep at all. Where is my husband?"
"He and Cornell went to get some coffee. They are finally speaking cordially to each other."
"A night in a police station worrying about the lives of one's children erases many foolish notions. Luis loves Julio. He is our only child."
"You know I understand. Romiette is our only daughter." Lady picked up last night's coffee cup and sipped the cold, tasteless liquid. The two fathers returned with fresh coffee. Captain Eskaluski walked with them. He was not smiling.
"Mr. and Mrs. Montague, Mr. and Mrs. Capel. As you know, our search last night was frustrating. As much as we could in the storm and darkness, we combed the woods around the lake and found nothing. Our investigation has also turned up another important piece of information, however," he added. "We have located the video camera that the young people mentioned."
Luis gasped.
"You have found the camera that was in my son's pocket, but not my son? How can this be?"
The captain explained.
"It was found in the trunk of the car that was used in the kidnapping."
"You are sure of that now?"
asked Cornell.
"Yes, we have viewed the tape several times."
The captain spoke carefully. He didn't want to upset these parents even more.
"It seems that the gang members threatened and intimidated your children, then forcibly placed them in their car and took them to what we assume is London Woods Lake. The video portion is fuzzy and dark, but we have very good audio. We have clear identification of each of the devil dogs involved. We can hear sounds of water and the voices of the gang members as they take Julio out of the trunk."
"There is no more after that," he said quietly.
"The trunk?" Maria gasped. "My Julio was in the trunk? Is he alive?" she cried.
"We think he was when they took him out, ma'am. And we have no reason to believe that he isn't still," the captain reassured her. She collapsed in tears.
"And Romy?" her mother asked quietly. "Anything of her?"
"Only at the beginning of the tape, Mrs. Capel. We hear screaming and struggling, and we think she was put in the back seat. That's all the tape tells us."
Lady Capel joined Maria on the bench. They shared tissues and hugs. The captain took a deep breath and continued.
"Now that the water has cleared and we have daylight, we have two options."
"What's that?"
asked Cornell.
get volunteers to comb those woods and to drag the lake.
Drag the lake? Exclaimed Romy's mother. Oh, no. That means you think they're dead.
No, not at all, Mrs. Capel. But it is one way of eliminating that possibility.
Oh, mi Julio. Oh, mi hijo. No. No. No.
Maria, it will be all right. Her husband soothed her. We'll find them. At least now we have something to do besides wait.
Cornell was ready for action.
Luis, we've got our equipment ready. Let's head for the lake now. I've got to get out there and find our children.
Si, Cornell. We've got blankets, rope, flashlights, a map of the woods.
What happened to those pictures of the kids, Maria?
His wife took the pictures from her pocket.
This is such a wonderful photo of Julio in his band uniform back home.
She sighed.
And Romy is such a lovely young woman.
She began to weep softly.
Don't cry, Maria. We are going to find them, Luis reassured her.
Luis took the pictures and placed them inside his jacket. Mrs. Capel reminded the men, I'm going to call the station and make sure the reports go out with every station break and make sure the news crews are on their way. You two got your cell phone to keep in touch with us?
Yes, Cornell replied. We're out of here.
See you up there, Lady B.
Our prayers will be answered soon.
You'll see. She wiped her eyes and kissed him quickly.